Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. Portland prides itself on being a tree city, but in fact, in recent years, Portland's tree canopy has actually shrunk. Friends of Trees, a nonprofit organization that addresses inequities in the urban canopy by planting trees with community involvement, has been working for years to increase the city's tree canopy and ensure that sufficient trees are planted in the neighborhoods that need them the most. Today we talk with Yasha Vasef, Executive Director of Friends of Trees, about the benefits provided by protecting our urban canopy, absorbing carbon and fighting climate change, keeping us cool, producing oxygen, and helping us to stay healthy. Yasha, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, for many years, I've noticed every so often in my neighborhood and around Portland, these green bags that are on the bottom of trees, and on either side are little wooden posts that say Friends of Trees. For people who have about as much knowledge as that about Friends of Trees, let's talk a little bit about what your organization actually does.
Yeah. By the way, that was my introduction as well. And Friends of Trees goes back to 1989. A gentleman by the name of Richard Seidman conceived the organization, and as you mentioned, what's core to our mission is to plant trees with community. We really believe in the power of volunteers, and we to now operate in six counties, not just in Oregon, but Southwest Washington as well in the Vancouver area, and over 900,000 native trees and native shrubs and trees planted, and getting close to that million marker. But we, as you said, we focus on inequities in the urban canopy. We also have a program called Green Space that does natural area restoration as well. And we also have workforce development programming to help diversify the urban forestry field.
And you're also not just in the Portland-Vancouver area, I understand, but you're also in Salem and in Eugene.
Yeah, we have an additional office in Eugene, a smaller team down there, and basically up and down the Willamette Valley between Eugene and Vancouver is our operating zone.
Well, one of the nicknames of Portland is Stumptown because many, many, many years ago, this was an amazing forest that went all the way down to the banks of the Willamette, and there were lots of native oaks, which are almost all gone now. And then, of course, the settlers came and they cut down all the trees, and that's why it was Stumptown for a while. And now we've paved over a lot of that area that used to be the riparian forest down to the Willamette. I wonder, do you have a vision of, through Friends of Trees, maybe helping Portlanders imagine and maybe start to reimagine that kind of landscape that has so much of an abundance of trees? Because obviously this is a place on the planet that really wants to have trees growing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you can go experience that vision today. If you go to a Lad's Addition or certain areas of Northwest Portland, you see that vibrant, mature canopy. You know, on a hot day, they're providing ample shade. They calm the tree. It's easier to walk and bike because drivers are driving a little slower due to the calming effect of those trees. And then you go to East Portland, especially formerly annexed Portland, 82nd and eastward, whole different scene. It's, very auto-centric design. You have these major arterial roads. You have massive parking lots, and you're creating a heat island effect. And I think my vision for what East Portland could look like is essentially some of those neighborhoods that already have that healthy canopy.
Well, actually, there are parts of East Portland that do. And you mentioned Lad's Addition, which, of course, is in Southeast Portland. And I live in Selwood, which has an amazing tree canopy. I mean, we are actually a lot, we represent a lot of the remnants of what used to be in the Portland area before it was really settled and urbanized. One of the things that kind of struck me last week, we have a leaf pickup because we have so many trees in our neighborhood. So we have two leaf pickups, one in November, one in December. And I had people coming over to visit on Sunday last week when we had all our cars off the street and everybody's, waiting for the leaf pickup to come. And I was thinking about somebody who was coming over to visit who did not live in a neighborhood where they have trees. And I thought, well, there's two parts to this. It's like there's the real pleasure of trees and the necessary health benefits of trees. And then there's all the leaves, which the city's gotten much better in recent years to pick up in the leafy neighborhoods. But when you look at who the neighborhoods are that have the leaf pickup, I think it's a real indication of the inequities. So let's talk about some of these neighborhoods that don't have enough trees, and including in close in Southeast Portland, and what you've done over the last, 33 years to start to address that problem.
Yeah, I'm with you on the leaves. I'm an avid cyclist, and you kind of experience those inequities when you're going through a neighborhood that has great leaf pickup and those that don't. And going back to the areas of where trees are lacking, deep East Portland for sure. The Lance neighborhood was one of the hottest neighborhoods during the Heat Dome event. And, you know, the inner east side industrial area and some pockets of North Portland that actually overlap with redlining. There's been a correlation and some good research on this, not just in Portland, but across the country. An association between redlining and lower canopy neighborhoods.
We're throwing around the phrase redlining a lot these days, but I think I might have some listeners who don't know what that is still. So briefly, what's redlining?
Yeah, it was the systematic segregation of black housing. And, you know, we will put essentially what was happening, certainly in the 1950s or so, is, you know, black Americans were kind of secluded to certain neighborhoods and didn't get the sort of care and resources and services that other neighborhoods did. You know, here in Portland, we rammed I-5 through those same neighborhoods. So it's not trees, it's across the board, but trees were certainly one element of that.
Well, actually, redlining was an insurance term, because the insurance companies would put red lines around the neighborhoods that they wouldn't basically give mortgages, suggest that mortgages should be given by the banks. It started with the FDR's administration. It was a federal government-sponsored way of maintaining ghettos, basically. I know that a number of people have done these studies comparing the redlined areas in Portland and other places with issues like heat islands. And it is very striking to when you see that.
Yeah.
I think another thing, when you mentioned North Portland, and North Portland also is adjacent to some of the worst toxic areas in Portland, in the United States for that matter, like this critical energy infrastructure hub, which is all those tank farms and all this pollution that goes there. So there's also no requirements for those businesses to plant trees, unlike in residential areas in other parts of the city. So how does Friends of Trees deal with these inequities?
Yeah, you know, we have kind of gone down our formula, which is engaging community members to get involved, show up at our plantings on Saturdays, and, you know, we put them through training. You learn the basics of how to plant a tree. And our belief is that today is a great day for climate action. And so we work with thousands of unique Portlanders every year, and to not just plant those trees as a community. What we believe happens there is you're creating the climate advocates of today and tomorrow. You're also increasing neighborhood stewardship of those trees, which is really vital. And essentially corralling people around this idea of what trees actually do for society. It's not just the physical benefits that we get. There are psychological benefits to trees as well. Being around them improves our mental health. We know this from research. The carbon sequestration, if you live near an interstate, you probably would hope that you live in a high canopy neighborhood, right, to sequester that carbon. So there's an array of benefits from those trees. And part of our approach is to educate the public as well as bring the public together, build community with one another, and plant those trees side by side.
So do you help people plant trees just in their parking strips, or do you also help them plant trees in their yards?
We do public and private property planting. So, you know, what we call the public right-of-way, we've traditionally done a lot of that. And in recent years, we have veered more into private property plantings as well, with business owners, property owners, anywhere we feel might be a good candidate. It's really important for us, though, for those property owners to have buy-in. You know, they need to opt into that. We're not going to tell them a tree is coming here, right? It's something we want to get people excited about, and we feel that model has been very successful.
Well, one of my closest experiences with Friends of Trees, my next-door neighbor years ago planted a tulip poplar about a foot and a half away from the telephone pole. And it was a very strange tree. And then every couple of years, PGE would come and top the tree. And so it turned into this giant bonsai. And there were several different households that lived in that house. And finally, the people who are currently living there, who've been here for about 14 years now, I guess, PGE told them that it would be a lot better if they just cut the tree down. Mm-hmm. And that they would actually pay for cutting the tree down. And this is after a number of neighbors, including us, have been asking, hey, please take this tree out. It really does not belong here. And so they took the tree out, and then Friends of Trees helped them find the appropriate tree, which turned out to be a red bud. It's a beautiful tree growing there. It's enough feet away from the water meter was actually right there too, and the roots of that tulip poplar had totally encircled the water meter. So I think it was, to me, it was an example of what homeowners who don't know what they're doing can do, as opposed to working with Friends of Trees. And we've been watching that redbud thrive for the last few years. I'm wondering if you've encountered any other situations like that where you're actually taking out a tree that shouldn't belong in the area, in the place where it is, and planted the appropriate tree.
Yeah, we definitely believe in the philosophy of right tree, right place. You know, we have arborists on staff, people who know far more about trees than I do, who will assess the environment and work with the property owner or whoever the community member is and figure out the right approach. And sometimes we have folks who want more trees than what we feel is adequate for a certain space. And so we rely on the experts on our team to work with folks. And we've certainly seen some instances of wrong tree, wrong place, and have come in to help kind of rectify that situation.
So do you charge people for your services?
So in Portland right now, if you live in five neighborhoods, you can get a free tree through Friends of Trees right now. That's Argay, Cully, Sumner, Park Rose, and Wilkes. And traditionally, we charge $35 for a tree. We try to come in at an affordable price. But if you have any financial limitations, we offer the tree for free. The reason...
I gotta say, $35 for a tree is really cheap.
Yeah.
And that includes all the services that you provide
as
well.
And it's not just getting the tree in the ground. We have our team come back and monitor those trees for a few years, water those trees for a few years. And with our changing climate, we're realizing that tree maintenance to help establish those trees needs to be extended from what has typically been around 3 years to 5 years. That's kind of our new goal, is try to build toward that five-year tree care model.
And so I'm assuming there's also a certain amount of education that you're providing the property owner as far as how to take care of this tree during the 5 years and then after the 5 years.
Absolutely. So we come back and we monitor those trees. We do an analysis and leave some information behind for the owner if they're not home. And it will tell them, you know, what we're observing. Hey, this looks like this needs more water. Or, you know, we have automated systems during a heat wave that will tell folks, plant your tree an extra time or two this next week or so. And so we want to be mindful of the changing climate and how vital watering the tree is during our hotter and drier summers.
I'm thinking, as you're talking about the neighborhoods that you're targeting, that there have been an awful lot of Friends of Trees planted in my neighborhood in Seltwood, mm-hmm. which is not a tree deficit neighborhood, though the way the city is helping it develop, it could become. But all the new developments actually have trees on the parking strips. So I'm wondering why there's so many in Selwood when you're actually trying to focus in areas further east and further north that are have much more serious tree deficits.
That's a great question. So roughly 70% of our trees are planted in what we call equity neighborhoods. We do also want to be available to folks in neighborhoods like Selwood who desire a tree. And what we believe there is, you know, the benefits of that trees does not stop at the boundary of Selwood. You know, the tree, and I'm a former refugee from Iran, and part of the reason I wanted to work at Friends of Trees, frankly, is the mitigation of climate refugees that tree planting can provide, not just here, but all around the world, and, you know, decrease the worst outcomes of climate change. So we do want to more and more focus predominantly on East Portland, specific to our Portland plantings.
So you say that you're a refugee from Iran. I'm taking it you weren't a climate refugee, though.
No, I was a refugee of war, but, you know, as the United Nations has been really clear, the refugees of today and tomorrow are increasingly refugees of climate extremities.
And I would assume, actually, that that's going to strike Iran pretty hard, too.
Oh, yeah. You're already seeing some really historic droughts in certain areas of Iran, and certain very rivers that have been like tourist attractions are drying out, and we're definitely seeing it there, as we are here in Portland as well.
We're listening to Locus Focus on KPBU Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG up here from KODX LP FM, KMN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Yasha Vasev, Executive Director of Friends of Trees, about the benefits provided by protecting our urban canopy. Well, one of the things that a lot of us have been noticing in Portland is how many trees are coming down. Mm-hmm. And they're coming down for a variety of reasons. Some of them have to do with the trees are old, like a number of the trees in Selwood Park had to be replaced in the last few years. And they had these notes up where they were going to be taking the trees down, saying, we know how hard it is to lose an old friend, but we're going to plant a new one for you. And they have, I think, planted pretty appropriate trees to replace. They were old oaks that they had to take down. But what's more concerning to me is that besides the trees that are old and falling apart, being killed by climate change, for that matter, that there's also a lot of trees taken out when they build these 4-6-story apartment buildings all over town with mixed-use buildings, and they build them right up to the sidewalk. There's no setback. And then they have been planting these little trees in the parking strips. But I have a friend who has a friend who's a forester who is saying that the trees that they're replacing do not have the same capacity to hold and store carbon as the old trees, and they're also not going to live as long. So I'm wondering if this is something that you're aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm actually a bit of an urban planning geek, and as a renter who's kind of experienced the crunch of housing here in Portland, I believe there can be a symbiotic dynamic here. You know, we need more housing; that's a fact. But we can also save some of these mature, well-established trees that provide that adequate canopy. And what I often see is, this is me just speaking my personal opinion here, is a tree getting cut down, and then not enough trees being put back in to replace that. To replace a mature tree, you probably need to put in dozens of young trees, and we're not quite seeing that. And so it is concerning. And we saw for the first time in the report to council every 5 years that we lost canopy, and that's very concerning. And that's a trend that we want to fight back against, but part of the issue here is we're losing canopy in the areas that are the hottest zones in Portland, which is leading to a loss of human lives during things like a heat dome or a really stark heat wave.
You mentioned Lentz, and I remember Lentz way back in the early 70s when it was the thrift store capital of Portland. And it was an old funky neighborhood. It was before it got really blighted, but it was definitely a working class, black people probably a little bit on the edge. In the outskirts, there was just on the other side of what became 205, because this is before 205 even existed, was farmland. And there were a lot of trees in Lentz. And now where all those trees were are these buildings with black siding and black roofs. And I had Vivek Chandes on several times. We've talked about the heat domes, and we talked about the infamous heat dome of the summer of 2021 when he went to the corner of, I guess it was Woodstock and 92nd, and it was about 168 degrees or something on the pavement. I think about what we've turned Lentz into, considering the blight that it went through between 1975 and the last few years. We've made it a much safer neighborhood. We've made it a neighborhood people maybe want to live in and walk in, and also that it's got more amenities. But we've turned it into the worst heat island in probably the Northwest. I just kind of want to go back and help people to picture what the areas were like when they had trees, even if they didn't have some of these other amenities, and then maybe visualize how do we reincorporate trees into that picture.
Yeah, first of all, I want to shout out Dr. Chandes. He's doing some amazing leading research on these topics, and we always look up to what's around the corner from him research-wise. He did find in that canopy report that through his mapping of Portland, that where Friends of Trees was planting, the canopy was either maintained or improved. And we were really excited to hear that. That speaks to the power of community coming together to address an issue. East Portland is just has been so disserviced that, you have the highest degree of roadless. If you live east of 82nd Ave, you're twice as likely to die as a pedestrian. You have the hottest neighborhoods in Portland. That means your energy costs are going up. When you put a tree next to a home and it's in the right spot, you can reduce those energy costs by 20% or more annually. So there's an array of benefits here that we're missing right now in lots of areas of East Portland. And we're excited by the Portland Clean Energy Fund and their historic $40 million investment opportunity, Urban Canopy. We're keeping an eye on that, and we're hopeful that perhaps we can play a role with community members in Portland to help address some of these issues in East Portland.
Well, one of the things that may be shifting has to do with some political leadership. And when Khan Pham was elected to the state legislature, that first time 2 years ago, and then I noticed last week she won by about a 40% margin. I mean, she really, she's obviously being recognized as being the powerhouse that she is. She lives just east of 82nd. And so one of her goals, and I think she's starting to achieve it, is to humanize 82nd Avenue. Another person who was instrumental in that, who unfortunately was not reelected, was Joanne Hardesty, who also lives east of 82nd. And I'm hoping in 2 years, when we have a new form of city government, that Joanne can come back in, because I think she really had a vision for one of the things, I guess, also was for the city to actually take ownership of 82nd Avenue, because right now, I believe it's a state highway, and it seemed like it was one of the orphan state highways. Well, and it seems also that like getting more trees into these neighborhoods is part of the package of also getting safer crosswalks and sidewalks and bicycle lanes and things that would make these neighborhoods just so much safer and more livable.
Yeah, definitely. You know, as part of the function of my role as executive director is I do try to talk with policymakers, including Representative Pham, who's done amazing work out there. And we talked about trees and what we could do to improve the canopy in areas like the Jade District, and you know, also focusing on sites like schools. Believe it or not, schools have some of the lowest canopies of any zones, aside from industrial zones. And so that's an area that we could we would love to work more with policymakers to see if we can, you know, increase investment in that kind of thing. And yeah, like culturally specific organizations we partner with up and down around Portland that represent different communities. It's really important for us to work with organizations that are trusted by the community and to make sure we're responsive to what the community is looking for. It's not always a tree. It might be something else. And, you know, we all work together to figure that that puzzle.
What are some of those organizations that you're working with?
Yeah, there's a number of them. There's Verde. We're working with them on the project in those neighborhoods in Northeast Portland I previously mentioned. We're working with Apano in the Jade District, including with the 82nd, which is actually, there's a jurisdiction of power change happening right now. We're Portland Bureau of Transportation is taking over, so they're starting some community conversations about what re-envisioning 82nd and how do we address canopy on that road. And so what a key organization that comes into play in that conversation is DPAVE. You know, 82nd is the kind of place where you might not have a planting strip on the street. It's just often a narrow sidewalk and then a parking lot. Where can we DPAVE and plant trees, appropriate trees?
Let's just talk for a second about who DPAVE is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so DPAVE is an amazing organization that will work with property owners to do just that. DPAVE segments are all of your property and re-envision that space in a more human scale design. Often that means maybe a play area, certainly grass and shrubs and trees as well. And they do some amazing work at some schools. I don't know any off the top of my head, but I would definitely encourage anyone who wants to know more about that to go to DPAVE's website.
I'm visualizing 82nd right now, and one of the saddest places for me on 82nd is where Johnson Creek flows on a culvert under 82nd, and I've spent a lot of time kind of following Johnson Creek from head to tail, and there are some very beautiful parts of it, places that have been really restored, but that is a place where the city like has Johnson Creek by the neck and is just, you know, closing in more and more. I'm wondering if you have any visualization for how that area where Johnson Creek is... what should cross 82nd, but is crossed by 82nd, how that could be transformed.
Yeah, and I'd also personally be curious to know what Johnson Creek Watershed Council might be envisioning there. But, you know, we've planted trees and shrubs along the Springwater Corridor, which is, you know, as we know, is parallel to Johnson Creek. And that area, you know, I ride that route all the time. You know, it's near and dear to my heart. 82nd is a beast. Like, you know, trying to re-envision what that area could look like, I think that's outside the purview of my expertise. But I, you know, envision a commerce street, an accessible nature, whether that means we rethink what happens with Johnson Creek there. I'd love to see some exploration of that. As is often the case, it's usually, I think, funding that gets in the way of our most ambitious plans.
One of the funny things to me about 82nd is that when I drive down it, which I do, I try to do as little as possible because it's also a very nasty street to drive on as well as to walk on. And I think about how little it's changed since I moved to Portland, which is 50 years ago, and that it has the worst attributes of the 50s planning in it. And it just seems to have sustained itself that way. And thinking about the crossing with Johnson Creek, if you go further south and just a little bit east of 82nd, where the new, well, it's not so new anymore, where Costco moved over about 15 years ago. And there's a creek, I don't remember the name of the creek, that flows right by Costco. And I remember the first time I went there, I noticed they left the creek and there's trees. It's not as much of a setback as I would like to see, but it's certainly a big change from the way the rest of 82nd relates to all. Because I know there's other streams that flow under 82nd besides Johnson Creek, and they're just completely forgotten. So I'm very excited by the idea of rethinking 82nd. But I just wonder how, if that street became a humanized and treeified street, how that might really change those neighborhoods and maybe really change Portland.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you'll save lives. You know, whether you're talking about heat waves, whether you're talking about street safety, you're going to save lives. And you're absolutely right. It's just it's also a dangerous road for drivers, just as much as it might be for pedestrians or cyclists. And so, you know, I'm excited by the prospect of what's on the table right now, which is that jurisdiction of power coming to the city and the city wanting to be responsive to what the community would like to see. And I believe there's a survey coming out soon, if it's not out already. And anyone listening, including yourself, could hop on that survey and kind of provide some of our collective vision to PBOT. But yeah, the streets like 82nd, you're right. It comes from an era where everything was designed around the automobile and we kind of just forgot about everything else. You know, if you look at Google Maps satellite view of 82nd, the amount of space we dedicate to parking is wild. And so there's opportunity here to grow density there, perhaps provide more affordable housing, maybe bus rapid transit, I think would be transformative on 82nd. And, you know, there are coalitions right now in the community, which Friends of Trees sits on, kind of have deliberating on some of these ideas. And we want to go back to the decision makers with a vision that's centered in what community members who live in that corridor would like to see.
Well, before we head north, I just want to spend a little bit more time in this kind of heat island area of Southeast Portland. And the other beast of a street is Foster Road. Now, mm-hmm. that street is going through transformation, particularly through Lentz, particularly where it meets 82nd. And it's no longer four lane in a lot of spaces. So I want to talk a bit maybe about the improvements that have happened on Foster Road, which could perhaps be translated to 82nd. The other issue with Foster Road is that it's slower than ever because they've taken out two lanes. There is the issue when you make these streets safer for everybody that they're also not going to be as fast for automobiles anymore.
Yeah, I think that's the trade-off, and from where I sit, I'm okay with that trade-off. You know, when you slow down a street, you're saving lives, and I think slower traffic is a trade-off I can sleep well with. You know, when you slow down Foster, all of a sudden you're making it a more walkable street. I businesses might see improvement. I think they added bike lanes to Foster. Tons of research showing when you add a bike lane, business can go up for an array of sectors. So, I look at places like Vancouver, BC as a model that we could follow perhaps. You know, they've done some of this work, but more extensively. And the business community there used to be against all these new bike lanes or road diets, as we call them. And now they can't have enough of it. And so I think we're in that transition stage that provides some headaches along the way. But as we do projects like 82nd, Friends of Trees wants to make sure that trees are part of the conversation. And especially if that's something the community is looking for, because we want it to feel like a livable, vibrant space. And often where trees are lacking, it feels like the opposite.
When you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMON and KCB in Astoria, Oregon, KCAI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Yasha Vasev, Executive Director of Friends of Trees, about the benefits provided by protecting our urban canopy. Well, let's head north now to another beast of a street, which is Sandy Boulevard, which is also going through a lot of transformation. Mm-hmm. However, particularly here, because we're only a couple blocks from Sandy right here in KBOO right now, and again, they took out a lot of trees over the last 25 years in Sandy Boulevard, put up a lot of buildings, and I'm not sure it's for the better, because I don't think they put many trees back in. So do you have any thoughts about how Friends of Trees might be able to help Sandy Boulevard become a healthier street?
Yeah, I think in a scenario like that, you know, it's really difficult because at that stage where it's established as it is right now, what that would entail right now in my mind is speaking with those property owners and seeing if we can identify areas for trees. Is there a parking lot that we could turn into a pocket park, for example? Those are some things that would excite me, is having these little pocket parks where you have parking lots that often sit empty for most of the day. And so there's a lot of different approaches, and that also includes as they, you know, PBOT is looking at Sandy, I'm sure, is something they might want to redesign in the future.
Actually, Sandy is probably a U.S. highway because it's 30 business route, I think, for part of it. So it's really far away from the jurisdiction of Portland.
Oh, if it's ODOT, I mean, yeah, it's same idea, though. You know, like if you're putting in medians, could we put in some kind of like MLK? Can we put in trees in the middle of the road to help reduce the heat coming off that pavement, and also traffic calm. So, you know, I'm not a traffic engineer or an urban planner, but you know, I would hope that trees are part of the equation when you're revisiting these streets and kind of rethinking the design.
Well, if we continue northeast on Sandy Boulevard, we get out to the Cully neighborhood, which is a fascinating neighborhood, a neighborhood that the group you mentioned, Verdi, has been working with mm-hmm. a lot in the last few years. And there, it's, you know, it's like very kind of semi-rural out there. And mm-hmm. so it's an area that is really changing. And I mean, I think a lot about how do you preserve the semi-rural character of Cully, which is one of its strengths, while giving it a lot more amenities and taking care of the safety issues. And Sandy Boulevard, as it goes through Cully, is just this wide sea of asphalt and traffic and no trees at all.
Yeah, Cully is one of those neighborhoods where we are planting right now. And you know, it's an interesting area because it's low canopy. You have poor air quality often there. In fact, that's one of the reasons we're planting there. And you also lack a lot of sidewalks there. And so you have to think a little outside the box in areas like Cully. But that's where it comes back to us doing outreach and education and getting folks excited to have trees out in front of their homes, maybe in front of their business. But, you know, where streets like Sandy and Cully converge, you know, we really lean on the bureaus of transportation to kind of come to us and say, hey, we see you as part of the solution here. I'll give you an example, like with TriMet, for example, when new rail lines come in, often at some of those stations, they will come to us and we will contract and plant trees at bus stops or train stops. We'd love to do some of that if Sandy were to be revisited in the Cully area and elsewhere. But yeah, Cully is a fascinating area. It's adjacent to an industrial zone. So, you know, trees are maybe the benefits of trees might be even more heightened than some of our other neighborhoods.
Well, Cully has some of the worst air quality in the city, mm-hmm. that and also Northwest Portland, which even in some of the wealthier parts of Northwest Portland are very much impacted by the critical energy infrastructure hub. But in Cully, I mean, they've had like historic things like the tire fire that happened a few years ago. And I wonder how much can trees really help the air quality there, because the air quality is so bad.
One tree won't make a difference, but if you can concentrate hundreds of trees and as they establish and mature, you know, the thing about trees is, and the reason why we feel a sense of urgency around planting more trees right now in Portland, is they don't mature overnight. You know, you need about 10 years until you really start seeing some significant benefits from those trees. So with Cully, you know, anyone there right now can go through us and get a tree for free. And so we certainly encourage that. It's like getting the word out in that communities like Cully is vital. But we would like to see increased funding and prioritization of neighborhoods like Cully. As you say, this is the worst air quality. Like, we need to go in there. And we, you know, not just us, the city of Portland should be planting trees there, Friends of Trees, businesses, whoever can plant trees. We think it's all hands on deck right now. It's all layers of society should be involved.
Well, I did a show a couple months ago about Verde with Candace mm-hmm. Avalos, who's the director, and we talked a lot about housing, and we talked about community gardens. I don't remember if we talked that much about trees. So I'm wondering how much energy is coming out of the Cully neighborhood and out of Verde to really focus on tree planting as well as all the other necessary things that they're working on.
Yeah, Verde, first of all, does amazing work. And one of the reasons we're there is because through a project we're calling Clean Air Canopy, and Cully was hosting community listening sessions, and there was a settlement with a business there with some funding coming through DEQ, and basically they had opportunity to have some sort of greening infrastructure project. And through those community listening sessions, they landed on trees. And so that's where we got looped in. And, you know, we have frequent meetings with Verde and other partners, Cully Air Action Team and some other folks out there to implement this project. And so we're hoping to plant up to 5,000 trees and native shrubs in Cully and those four other neighborhoods I mentioned earlier. And, you know, Verde has done amazing work. You know, we learn a lot when we sit down with a group like Verde, because they really have figured out how to do community engagement in a way that's inclusive to all members of community. And so I do want to shout them out. And I think they're doing amazing work. And we hope we can continue to partner with groups like Verde.
I want to talk a bit more about that whole thing of really reaching out, because one of your missions is very clearly to reach communities in the city, or in the cities that you work with now, mm-hmm. and surrounding areas that are usually marginalized. And a lot of them are communities of color, and they're mm-hmm. just about all low-income communities. So how do you do that outreach?
Yeah, you know, often it's specific to certain communities, but, you know, we partner with, for example, Blueprint Foundation, which is Black-led and supports Black youth. And we work closely with them over the years to provide pruning educational opportunities for those youth. We work with a number of community-specific organizations where we try to recruit participants into our adult urban forestry program to kind of create a pathway for folks in the community who maybe didn't even know they're interested in trees to receive an education, on-site training, and then have internships in the field with cities and businesses that work with trees. Like I mentioned, I'm originally from Iran. It really comes down to the specific community and might require a different approach. And I'm not saying we've solved that puzzle. It's an ongoing effort, but partnering with organizations like the ones I've mentioned really help evolve our understanding of how to engage different communities.
Well, back to Cully again. I think about one of the greenest successes in Cully is Cully Park. Mm-hmm. I wondered if Friends of Trees had much to do with that development, and if we could talk a little bit about how that has really transformed the neighborhood.
Yeah, Friends of Trees was not, as far as I'm aware, you know, I joined the team last year. I don't think we were like aggressively involved in that, but we certainly supported, and my understanding is certain Verde, I'm sure, and I believe Community Cycling Center, there's a group they work with called ABC. And ABC is local folks in Cully who are Spanish-speaking, and I believe they helped leverage some of what happened there. So shout out to those folks. And I used to, full disclosure, I used to work at Community Cycling Center and big fan of what they do. But we need more of that. You know, we need more of those parks that kind of help us re-envision space and how we interact with that environment. And if folks haven't been to Cully Park, I'd certainly recommend it. If you could look at before and after pictures, it's amazing what's happened there. And you could even look at, if you go back, you know, a long ways, Waterfront Park used to be a highway. You know,
I remember those days.
This is the kind of visioning we need to have, this more ambitious visioning to make sure that all Portlanders have access to parks and the benefits that come with a park.
Well, when I've been out at Cully Park, one of the things that strikes me is how it gives you a vision of what was, and then there's a vision of what is that is very disturbing, and then another vision of what could be. Mm-hmm. But the first thing is you see all the mountains. I don't think you might even be able to see right near, but you see Hood, St. Helens, Adams, beautiful views, and it's almost like being out in the country. But the only issue is that there's all this industry that you can see between you and the mountains. There's the railroad tracks where oil trains are going by all the time. And there's the air, which the quality, I think, when you're in the park is probably somewhat better, but still has been a big issue. Mm-hmm. And I know I've heard stories, in fact, Candace talked about parents who complain about their kids go and play soccer in the park, and then they come home and their clothes just, wow, this horrible stench of all this industrial toxins that are just in the air. And the other thing, though, is that there's still these trees. I mean, Cully still has a very large tree canopy in places, not around Sandy Boulevard and Cully Boulevard, but certainly even up on Prescott, which is now they're putting sidewalks in on Prescott, so that's one advance. But I am concerned that as Cully develops, that it doesn't become another Lentz, and that a lot of the trees come out as these basically high-rise buildings go in.
You bring up a good point. If you could see the industrial zone from that park, at least we could, as a city, as a community, as a society, try to get buy-in from some of those industries to have trees on their property. You know, industrial zones in Oregon typically have something like 2-3% canopy cover. It's woefully low, and there's so much room to plant trees.
And the city tree code, which was implemented a number of years ago, does not include industrial areas. They're exempt. Mm-hmm. And that's been a big issue for a lot of the groups that I've been working with, that this is, like, again, very clearly environmental injustice and racial injustice as well. So I think that that's another place. I don't know that Friends of Trees does much lobbying with the city. Well, we'll get to a little bit of that in a moment. But there needs to be a lot more pressure put on the city council to really change those ordinances so that there is a tree code that's implemented for industrial areas as well as for commercial and residential areas.
Definitely. I think this is a big opportunity, and we need to think big. And Portland could be a leader on that front. And I do think there's a role for private sector as well. Like, I want to shout out PGE because they've actually, behind the scenes, been looking into this a little bit, industrial zones and canopy, and are piloting a project around that. Additionally, Oregon Department of Forestry, Scott Altenhoff is our new state forester. He was on OPB earlier this year, and he specifically mentioned industrial zones, and I'd be curious to see what comes out of his office. So I think if we can get a coalition around this to include the city of Portland, I would be so excited to see what an industrial zone might look like in 10 years.
Well, I appreciate PGE in some ways. I mean, they're a funny company because in some ways they are kind of an environmental leader. On the other hand, they've fought like hell to keep their gas-powered power plant in Central Oregon and near Boardman going and trying to expand it. And the other thing I learned recently is that they're cutting down a whole bunch of trees in Forest Park to expand the high-voltage power line corridor. So I wonder, when you work with somebody like PGE, how you kind of maneuver between their two faces or maybe four faces that they have.
Sure. Well, I'm sort of not familiar with everything they do, but I do know that when they feel they need to, for example, bring a tree down for a power line or something like that, they pay into a fund in the city of Portland that's supposed to support tree planting elsewhere. There's some built-in regulation of that, but it's certainly outside of my area of expertise. But I just, in my experience with PGE, and I think it's important to bring folks like that in the room to kind of model what healthy green Portland could look like. You know, I think they're part of the solution. I don't really believe in outcasting actors in this process. I go back to what I said earlier. I think all layers of society can play a role here, and we can see ethics change over time.
It's good to hear that. I mean, with PGE, sometimes I wonder if some of what they do is just trying to co-opt the environmental movement. And I know I have friends who would view it that way. But I also think it's important to appreciate the stuff that they do, which is actually good. So
yeah, I mean, the folks I know there that we've partnered with in the past, they have some great internship programming called Project Zero and some other projects there. They're great people, and they're like-minded. I think they want the same thing we all want, and I think it takes people like that in businesses and in the city, at nonprofits like Friends of Trees. Sometimes the leadership isn't doing what you want to see, and you need folks like that to kind of apply a little pressure, that nudge that we all need from time to time.
And it's also interesting just thinking about PGE's history. When I came to Portland, not long after I came, they started to build a nuclear power plant out at Trojan. And they were not listening to the community. And then they were bought by Enron. And then it was kind of a total disaster. And then Enron imploded, and PGE very cleverly extricated itself from Enron. And I feel like, even though I still have some issues with PGE, that they are a very different company. And the fact that they became locally owned again made us all appreciate at least having a locally owned power company.
Yeah, definitely. And I can only speak to my experiences with PGE from a Friends of Trees lens, but they've been a very supportive partner. And it's not just us. They support a lot of our leading progressive nonprofits here in Portland.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Yasha Vasev, Executive Director of Friends of Trees, about the benefits of protecting our urban canopy. I want to talk now, for the last part of the show, about the city of Portland and your relationship with it.
Sure.
And for one thing, I've heard from several environmental activists that I work with that this is the least environmental city council Portland's had in 20 years. So, and you're relatively new to the community, I take it. So you probably don't remember the good old days. So I just wonder how your sense from working with Friends of Trees, what kind of support do you get from the city and what would you like to see more of?
Yeah. I want to start by saying we've been really grateful for the support we've received. And, the work with the Bureau of Environmental Services, our big contract that we had for many years, there were some great folks at the city we've worked with around that, and it's been just an awesome experience for our team to be able to provide that work through the support of Bureau of Environmental Services. And, you know, a lot of that funding, I think we're centered a lot in that conversation about that contract ending, but what folks don't realize is some other organizations were receiving funding to through Friends of Trees for that work, including Blueprint Foundation, POIC School, APANA over the years, and some other great organizations. You know, we understand contracts end. My personal disappointment is that it's there wasn't a new opportunity to apply for tree planting for Friends of Trees or any organization at a time when we're losing canopy. And I know that behind the scenes, the city's aware of this, and you know, they're working on finding solutions. And I look at Portland Clean Energy Fund as maybe our next level of engagement with the city around urban canopy improvement. But you know, we'll apply just like everyone else, and we'll keep our fingers crossed and we'll see what happens. But you know, we have been grateful for that partnership we had with the city. What was disappointing as well is just what was in the OPB article that came out early this year that kind of unearthed some inter-bureau tension, and it seems like a lot of organizations like ours were perhaps collateral of that tension. That's disappointing, but I think you know, there's always space for things to improve, and you know, I don't want to speak ill of anyone. I just hope that we can get back to a stage where, again, all layers of society are involved with addressing the urban canopy in Portland.
Well, it could be that with the new form of city government that is going to be evolving over the next 2 years, it might make it a lot easier for the city bureaus to work together. Just a little history about the Bureau of Environmental Services. Up until maybe 10 years ago, it was an amazing agency. It was, I mean, it did a huge amount to restore and protect and really help Oaks Bottom thrive. And that's important to me because I live a block away from it. And it was amazing to learn how the bureau that I thought was basically about sewers was actually about environmental services, and that there was a lot of understanding in those days that you didn't just have the pipe infrastructure. And that was in the days when they're building the big pipe to sort of retire our sewage overflow system that was pumping all the sewage into the Willamette River and to get it cleaned in a proper way before it was discharged into a river again. But they also were doing all kinds of tree planting and all kinds of watershed restoration and really amazing things, as well as building swales in neighborhoods to help divert store water and clean it naturally. And then the business community in Portland kind of rose up against it and filed a bunch of lawsuits and really frightened people. And there was the very visionary director at the time, Dean Marriott, who I had a lot of respect for, was forced out through city politics. And I think since then, BES has been a lot more timid about what they've done. They're not doing the kind of really innovative work, environmental work, that they were doing up until about 10 years ago. So that's one thing that's changed. And they were the bureau that you were working with. The thing in the OPB article that was disturbing was that BES and the Parks Bureau seemed to be fighting with each other. And it seemed that the city commissioners in charge of both of those didn't have a handle on their staff. And to me, it was an example of why you don't have city commissioners running the bureaus, that you need to have people who really know what they're doing, and they don't have all this kind of political stuff going on. So I wonder if you're hopeful that maybe with a different kind of city government that we might be able to have more functional bureaus in general.
Yeah, I'm usually an optimistic fella, and I'm hopeful with the passage of the charter reform that we can just find that sweet spot where the city is doing what they can, and again, community is doing what we can, and business is playing a role as well. I think you have to get business to buy in. I mean, we live in a capitalist society, so they assert a lot of influence, and I think we need to help educate sometimes business about the benefits of trees or the benefit of a bike lane or you know, a more walkable street in front of their business. And so you know, the Bureau of Environmental Services contract we had was actually a leading model for stormwater treatment. So other cities around the country started emulating that model, and we have been nothing but grateful for that, and it's amazing folks there. And we also have had some smaller contracts with Parks and Rec, and you know, our green space program, for example, still plants at parks, and you know, we work through their permission to do that, and they help provide us with a list of what we can plant. Just like with street trees, Urban Forestry in Portland would let us know what the approved street tree list is. And I think, you know, we can have a really meaningful partnership is kind of what I try to envision, especially with the Portland Clean Energy Fund opportunity with that $40 million in over 5 years in urban canopy improvement that's on the table right now. But yeah, I'm really excited to see what happens with charter reform, and you know, having something akin to a city manager, I think would help resolve any intramural tension. And you know, I'm cautiously optimistic. I think good things might be ahead of us.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting process to get there. And I'll be actually doing a show with Damon Mott-Story, who is the communications director for the campaign to pass the commission, the charter change. So I'll be doing a show with him in a few weeks and kind of see where we go from here. Mm-hmm. But I do think there's a lot of openings, I think, that we haven't been, because we've been stuck in this really strange form of government for so many decades. I mean, it's over 100 years, actually. One more thing I want to talk about, because we focused on communities on the east side. I wanted to talk about maybe some of the communities in North Portland, and I'm not sure if you're working with any of the industrial parts of Northwest Portland, but I just want to get a sense in the last few minutes of what your vision is there, because in some ways that's some of the gnarliest parts, because that's really close to the worst pollution in Portland.
Yeah, I appreciate that question. You know, a lot of what we do is contingent on where our funders, the parameters, you know, we're a nonprofit. This is one of the shortcomings of the nonprofit sector in my mind, is that often we don't get the unrestricted funding support to go where we know we need to go. So often we might identify a neighborhood, let's say like Boise in North Portland, that we know is lower canopy, but we need to find funding to go in there. And so we have an amazing fundraising team, and we have amazing community support from individual giving to business support. And we also will continue to look for government and foundation support and just find that sweet spot that gives us some leverage. But you're absolutely right about North Portland. There are some zones there that have really poor air quality because they're adjacent to industrial areas. You know, you look at what happened, again, going back to I-5 coming in, a lot of trees and homes came down for that. And if you go to kind of where it used to be, you know, there's a lack of canopy in a lot of those neighborhoods. So we have something behind the scenes I can't quite talk about yet, but there might be an opportunity for us to go into North Portland next season that we're excited about. And we might know in a few months what that might look like.
So how can people get more involved with Friends of Trees?
Yeah, you can go to our website right now, look at our calendar.
And what is your website?
Friendsoftrees.org, thank you. We have a calendar of all our events, not just in Portland, but in the region, and anyone can sign up for a volunteer opportunity through there. And you don't need to know how to plant a tree. We have arborists and volunteer crew leaders who are amazing at this, who will walk you through it. And, you know, I guarantee you, once someone comes once, they come back, because I've met folks who've been doing it for 20, 30 years on a volunteer level, and you know, some of have moved on to work in urban forestry field. So for me, it's my Zen moment, getting into the dirt and planting a tree, and then getting to know some of my fellow community members is amazing. In fact, at an event in Tualatin last season, I met another refugee from Iran, and that was a really special moment for me. But yeah, friendsoftrees.org, check out our calendar, and please sign up for volunteers, and we definitely welcome families as well.
Well, I want to thank you for all those trees that line 13th Avenue in Southeast Portland, because there's quite a few that Friends of Trees planted. Mm-hmm. So thanks, Yasha, for being on. It's been really great, really great to talk to you.
Thank you, Barbara. It's been a pleasure.
We've been talking with community organizer Yasha Vasev, executive director of Friends of Trees, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are doing an incredible job of not only keeping KBOO on the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio possible during this pandemic. And you can help us if you're able by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting Community Powered Radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. Next week, we'll talk with Bob Jenks with CUB, the Citizen Utility Board, about the mendacity of Northwest Natural. Thanks for listening. We'll go out with music by Kate and Anna McGarrigle. Stay safe, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance and wear a mask when necessary. Must I follow?